This week, jury selection began in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, whose actions led to the death of George Floyd. And we've been watching the jury be selected, and the questioning has been going on. The seven jurors have been selected. Next week, it's going to continue. Some say cases won or lost when a jury is selected. How important is the selection process? With us to talk about jury selection is David Zahner. He's founder of Zahner Trial Consulting, based here in Chicago. He helps lawyers in jury selection, mock trials, witness preparation. He's handled over 1,000 cases in almost every state of the country. Hi, David. How are you?
Doing great, Karen. Thanks for having me on.
So let's talk about just in general, high-profile cases like this. How is it possible to get an impartial jury in a case like this?
It's possible, but it's extremely difficult because they can't unsee what they've already seen. And to find 12 people who have not seen this video, especially in the Minneapolis area and Hennepin County, would be extremely difficult. So what you're trying to find instead are jurors whose views haven't been set in concrete by their pre-existing biases and experiences. And that's what they're trying to do with the jury selection process right now.
So the judge did not move venue, meaning the defense asked that the case be moved out of Minneapolis because of the pretrial publicity. And the judge kind of said, well, you know, there's no place in any corner of the state that we're going to find people who haven't seen this video and know something about the case. So we're better prepared and we're better equipped to handle a jury trial of this magnitude in our big city of Minneapolis. But, you know, do you think judges generally do a good job of weeding out the people who may have already made up their minds and the people who are really truly impartial?
Judges try, but honestly, their main goal is to seat 12 jurors and get the trial going. And if they were looking at everybody who had a pre-existing belief of this case and got rid of them, it would not be possible to seat a jury. So what judges are trying to do is find people who are willing to say what we call the magic words, is that they can put aside their pre-existing beliefs and be fair. And as soon as a judge hears that someone say, okay, I can put aside what I've seen before and be fair, even if it's probably not actually true that they can do that, jurors all the time say they can be fair, but they often don't realize they're kind of lying to themselves. The kind of juror I'm always most nervous on is the one who says, I'm the fairest person I know. Because they are the ones who haven't identified that they have some pretty strong biases. They just think that what their view is correct. And that's what's happening in this selection here. You have people who are saying they can put aside some pretty strongly held beliefs that they have, and whether it's true or not is always up for debate. It's what they really believe. I don't think that the jurors are in any way lying about their beliefs, but you can convince yourself that you can put things aside, but the way your brain makes decisions, it's really hard to do.
If you have any questions here for Dave about jury selection or the Derek Chauvin trial in particular, give us a call here at 312-981-7200. But let's talk a little bit about what both sides really want when it comes to a jury. And this is a kind of an interesting case because the prosecution usually wants the law and order jurors because they're usually prosecuting somebody who, you know, did something wrong and they want the police to testify. And this is kind of a law and order thing. But this is a flip-flop because they're prosecuting a police officer, right? So what kind of jurors does a prosecutor want in a case like this?
Yeah, you nailed it exactly right. Both sides are looking for the exact opposite of what they actually look for in the past. This is very similar to the Van Dyke trial we had here in Chicago a couple years ago, where the defense is usually looking for people who are a little skeptical of the police, who may have had some problems in their past or know people who have had problems with the police. And they're usually looking for people who are willing to accept that maybe the police made a mistake. Here it's the exact opposite. The defense is the one looking for the, as you said, the law and order types. They're looking for older jurors who are more conservative, gun owners, people who are going to be predisposed to believe that Derek Chauvin was in fear of his life or in fear of safety of others and had to act in the way he did. Whereas the prosecution is the exact opposite. Normally, those are the people that the prosecution wants on the jury, the people who are very pro-police, who trust in the decisions police make. And here, it's the opposite. They're looking more for people who instead are a little more skeptical of the police and aren't going to believe Derek Chauvin when he says when he testifies that what he was doing was necessary for public safety.
Yeah, you're going to want some. I mean, I always think of someone who's out there protesting. You know, I would love to ask that question to a potential juror. Did you participate in any of these protests? You know, did you vote for Bernie Sanders? You know, you want that crowd who feels very strongly about these issues. Not only are they liberal and not only are they skeptical, they feel very strongly about them.
Yeah, and they actually have at least one juror who has said, yeah, I went to one of the protests went to the site of the scene with my fiance. Obviously, there's a reason that people would choose to participate in a protest or choose to go visit the scene of where this happened. And it's not likely to be those views are not likely to be helpful for the defense.
Absolutely not. We're here with David Zahner, who is with Zahner Trial Consulting here in Chicago. So, Dave, the jurors filled out a form and apparently had like 89 questions. And from those questions, there are other questions are being asked of the jurors orally. You as a jury consultant, not knowing exactly what was on that list, what kinds of things are you looking for in those answers? And then what are you doing to prepare for the voir dire process? Are you Googling them? Are you trying to figure out more from social media? What are the tasks that you would do as a jury consultant?
The main task that you're trying to do as a jury consultant in a high-profile case like this, and actually in any case, is you're looking for people who have strong pre-existing attitudes, experiences, and beliefs that they're not going to give up and that are going to influence their decisions in the case. Jurors always view the evidence of a case through their life experiences, through their pre-existing attitudes and biases. And bias is not a negative word. Bias is just what your life experience has caused you to believe is true. And so what you're really looking for in these questionnaires are people who have had really strong views. Because people with strong views, we call them salient views, are views that aren't going to go away. And they're not going to be able to put them aside when evaluating the case. So what you're strongly looking for is people who have expressed very, very views that make it hard for them to view the evidence fairly.
Give us an example of something tangible that you would say, yeah, that's a red flag that they have these salient views.
Yeah, for example, someone who would, seen the video and had already formed an opinion about the case. And that's one of the questions that they were asked multiple times, both in the questionnaire and in the voir dire process. And all that you're trying to do is if you can get a juror to admit they've already formed an opinion, that is, for a judge, is very hard for them to allow that person on the jury, because that's the one thing jurors are not supposed to do. They're not supposed to have any opinion about the guilt or innocence of the defendant before they come into the jury box. And so what you're trying to do is to get people who you've identified that have that you think have negative attitudes and experiences towards your clients if you're the prosecution, for people who in favor of the defendant, you're looking to get them to admit that they can't be fair and that they've already formed an opinion.
So as a jury consultant, you have this list of potential jurors. Would you be Googling them and would you be looking on their social media and seeing what they're saying? Is that fair to do? I mean, you're allowed to do that, right?
Yes, you're absolutely allowed to do that. The problem with social media is you get all this chaff. You get all these things that are interesting, but not directly related to the case. In this particular case, though, you might have had people who posted about the video when it came out. And so you would want to see if they had any comments or direct things. But it's unlikely you're going to find that for most jurors. And a lot of times your time is better spent, instead of going through lots of social media posts, looking specifically at what they've already told you. They filled out a long questionnaire. But after reading that questionnaire, if you don't know if that juror is good or bad for you, then you probably aren't doing your job very well. So you really need to focus on what they put in writing, and then what they say. But most specifically, you want to look at what they put in writing, because once a juror gets into court and the judge starts questioning them and asking them, well, you could put that aside, right? They will backslide. They will say, of course I can, Your Honor.
Right.
Because nobody wants to tell a judge, no, I can't be fair.
We're going to continue this.
You want to focus.
Yeah, we're going to, let's continue this conversation. David Zahner, trial consultant. If you have a question here for him, 312-981-7200. You're listening to WGN. Welcome back. We're here with Dave Zahner. He is a jury consultant. We're talking about the jury selection process that's going on in the Derek Chauvin case. Dave, tell me, have you followed what kind of jurors are being selected? And do you have any comments, just general comments about the seven jurors who have thus far been selected?
Yeah, it's been I've been following this fairly closely, and it's pretty interesting who's been selected. There's been definitely a area of compromise between the two sides. As we've already talked about, the prosecution is looking to get rid of older white males, conservatives, and the defense is looking to get rid of people who might have some issues with the police. And so what you've ended up getting is younger jurors because they are less likely to have had strong opinions or experiences with the justice system. So you've had especially white younger white males. I think three of the jurors are young white guys, and that seems to be the compromise. Looks like the defense is getting rid of more women, and the prosecution is getting rid of some of the older white jurors, and you're ending up with a group of younger jurors, which honestly is probably not the greatest for the defense, because younger jurors are more likely to be socially liberal, especially in Hennepin County, and more educated. Both of which might be problematic for in terms of pre-existing attitudes that might dispose people to believe the prosecution. But now, the defense is doing a pretty good job of getting rid of anybody who has strong bias against their client.
Race cannot be allowed to be considered, and that's our U.S. Supreme Court has spoken on that issue. But clearly, race—you know—I mean, if you're selecting a jury and you're the prosecution, don't you want African American jurors on? But you can't select them based on race. So how does that play out in the real world when you know it's a factor, but you can't legally consider it?
Right, and it's really important when selecting a jury that you don't let your own pre-existing beliefs, bias you a little bit about who you're selecting. And I think they've done a pretty good job in this case. It isn't so much the race of the juror, it's the attitudes and experiences that they have. And some attitudes and experiences are more prevalent for different people of different backgrounds. And so what you really want to ask are the experiential questions that will allow you to eliminate jurors who are going to be biased against you. And there's a really good example on this jury. There is a black juror in his 30s who you would think, boy, that defense would probably want to stay away from someone like that. But if you look deeper and see more about his background, he's a recent immigrant who has an IT background. And both of those are probably more important than just his race in determining his views. Immigrant jurors are often much more supportive of the state and the justice system. I mean, that's one of the reasons they came here, is for our system of justice. And someone with an IT background is much more likely to be conservative. So the defense made a good choice, most likely, in allowing that juror to stay on.
Interesting.
That's the only black juror that's on the jury right now.
Very, very interesting. Now, let's talk about testimony. And one of the things you do as a trial consultant, because you're not just a jury consultant, you consult with attorneys on all of these things. Derek Chauvin is almost for sure going to have to testify, right? I mean, he's going to have to get up there and testify as to what he thought at the time, that what he reasonably thought he was doing, and why he used the force that he did. If that's the case, and you are the trial consultant, Dave, what do you say, and how do you get Derek Chauvin to do a good job on the witness stand? What are some of the things you would tell him?
Well, the main thing you would want him to use is his expertise as a police officer. And you would want to establish that the advantage that the defense will have is they will get to question him first. And you will need to establish that he is an officer with a long background and experience, and walk through the different things he has to do every day when making decisions about what type of force to use, especially with someone who has shown that they're not going to be compliant. And one of the main themes of the defense is that George Floyd was non-compliant, and therefore it was necessary to use a certain amount of force to prevent him from being a danger to people around. And that is what they're going to want to have jurors get inside the head of Derek Chauvin and say, here are the fears that I had when this was going on that you can't see in the video. And use that to establish, and he's going to need to be sympathetic, and not in terms of jurors feeling sorry for him, but jurors understanding that he had a really difficult decision to make. And while he might do things differently if he had it to do again, he didn't. He had to make a decision right there about the actions he would take. And if you can get jurors to start thinking through his process, that is the way to get jurors to feel sympathetic towards him and understanding of the decisions he made.
At what point do you tell Derek Chauvin, would it be good for him to be contrite, to be apologetic, or would that work against him? You know, because what happened was a terrible result. I mean, we can all agree on that. But how do you tell him to portray himself and what he did so as not to be a cold police officer who just saw, well, that's he got what he deserved? But does it make sense to have him be a little bit apologetic?
Yes. In fact, my guess is at some point he would say, I am very sorry about the outcome. It is not at all what I intended. One of the major issues for second degree murder in Minnesota is intent. And he needs to prove, that's the reason he's testifying, is to show he did not in any way intend for any harm to come to George Floyd. It was an unfortunate thing that happened that he never intended to happen. And that is going to be one of the hardest thing to do when confronted with the video, because a lot of the reaction to the video is it shows that he was, the length of the time that he was administering what he was doing. It makes it very difficult to make that intent argument. But that's what he's going to have to do in his testimony.
Now, as a trial consultant, are you also consulting with the attorneys on how they should be conducting themselves and their strategies when it comes to the theme of their defense or their prosecution?
Yeah, that actually is, a much bigger part of our job than selecting the jurors, because you can have the best jury in the world, but if you don't have the themes that connect with them, then you don't have a case. And so the main thing that jury consultants and trial consultants do is craft themes that are very appeal to a wide range of people. And that's what we try and do in these cases.
So what you already talked about when you're talking about the defense is law and order. You're talking about someone who's making very difficult, quick decisions every day. Their lives are on the line every day, and they've had experience with people who have been noncompliant, which have turned into bad situations. I mean, I suppose that's one of the themes, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And then can you tell us a little bit about, you know, I feel like, you know, this is a world that's become very, very polarized. Even since I last saw you, Dave, with politics and social media, people only listen to cable that they like on Fox or on CNN. So and nobody wants to hear the other side of things, it seems, these days. Has that affected jury pools to some extent? And if so, how?
It's kind of always been the case. I mean, people always have how their pre-existing attitudes impact them. But what it's done with jury pools, though, it's brought them more to the surface. It used to be people would be much more hesitant to express that they had a strong view. For example, a very strong view about immigration, either pro or against. But what the political environment has done is made people feel more comfortable expressing that. Because as you say, people are kind of in their own echo chambers, and so they suddenly think that their views are not their views are mainstream, when a lot of times they're not. And so jurors are more willing to express things that maybe were considered to be socially taboo than they were in the past. And so it's become easier to get people to express their true opinions, which makes it a little easier in the jury selection process.
Ah, interesting. And, you know, there was a case, I don't know if you followed, in Lake County, where a judge, who I've appeared before, had jurors remotely. He had jurors, like, sitting in their homes judging a case. And I think all the litigants and the lawyers agreed to that. It wasn't something that he imposed on them, but he said, do you want to try it this way? And they all agreed. What do you think of that, jurors who are sitting in their homes judging a case? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it actually does. It surprisingly does. Jurors work really hard to do a good job. While there are well-known examples of jurors falling asleep or not doing what they're supposed to, that's incredibly rare, actually. And jurors really want to do the right thing. And so jurors, if they're selected, even if they're at home, they're going to be attentive, and they're actually going to maybe feel more comfortable and more able to focus on the case if they're not concerned about, for example, COVID infection by being in the courtroom.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So, because I'm concerned because body language is so important when you're judging credibility of witnesses and the parties, that you're missing a little bit of that when you're at home in a Zoom.
Yeah, you do lose a little bit of being able to have outside information, such as, you say, body language, influence people. But what it does, and we do a lot of our focus groups online now, so we've had a lot of experience with that now. And jurors actually get to the heart of the evidence, even when they only see it on Zoom. So it's been, if you had asked me before COVID, if this was a good idea, I probably would have had a different view. But the experience that we've now had, everyone's gotten a crash course in Zoom etiquette and how people act on Zoom. And it's been surprisingly good for people to evaluate cases.
Thank you so much for joining us. David Zehner, founder of Zehner Trial Consulting, Z-E-H-N-E-R. He does a very, very good job. I know I have lawyers listening, and I would highly recommend him. Dave, take care, and thank you, and join us again soon, okay?
Thanks, Taryn.
All right, take care.